Hello, everyone, and welcome to Untangled Resolutions' presentation of The Problem is the Answer. I am your host, Batabi Limtombini, and I'm coming to you live from Harlem, USA. Today, we talk about a topic that should be of interest to anyone who has children, or works with children, or is planning to have children, or knows someone who has children. What are your options for communicating with a child when you have a conflict? My guest today is Mark Kleinman. Mark is a former staff attorney for the Juvenile Rights Division of the Legal Aid Society and the founder and executive director of Community Mediation Services Incorporated, located in Queens. CMS works in the areas of juvenile justice, community and family mediation, education, child welfare, youth development, and homelessness. Mark is a New York State Court Certified Mediation Trainer in Community, Custody, and Parent-Teen Mediation, and he co-wrote the only Office of Court Administration-funded Custody Visitation Mediation Curriculum. Among many other accomplishments, he co-designed a definitive mediation model called Value-Centered Mediation. Today, he will share with us his wisdom for how to resolve conflicts with your kids. You are listening to Bonge Ziwe Mabandla, a wonderful artist from South Africa. The song is called Umlilo Wezisatu from his album Umlilo. Check him out online. Sit back and listen while everyone gathers. I'll be back with you in just a moment.
The problem is
everyone, it sounds as though we have been on the air all this time, and you've heard everything that's been going on as Mark and I were preparing for the show. I messed up a little bit here and didn't turn off the microphone, so now you know what happens behind the scenes before the show starts. So we have a new platform here. If you've been listening to the show for a couple of weeks, you'll know that they've updated our dashboard, and it's really beautiful and wonderful. But the way that you know that your microphone is live has changed, and so the color is different, and I didn't realize that the mic was on. We didn't say anything, Mark, that we're concerned about going over the air.
I hope not.
No, right?
If I could remember, I'd be upset.
Right. So we said wonderful things about South African music and the show and how it goes. And you got to hear all of that. So we're being transparent today. We'll just call it that. We don't have a chat room today. For some reason, I'm having a little bit of technical difficulty with that as well. But please feel free to call in. If you hear anything that you'd like to comment on, if you want to ask Mark any questions, the number to call is 818-532-9789. Please call 818-532-9789. And if you're just joining us, you are listening to Untangled Resolutions presentation of The Problem is the Answer. And I'm your host, Batabi Labuntumbidi, Couples and Divorce Mediator. Untangled Resolutions is a private practice in couples and divorce mediation. If you have an issue that just won't go away, work it out in couples mediation. If ending a relationship is your healthiest choice, I can guide you through the process so that you don't lose your shirt or your mind. I am so happy to welcome Mark Kleiman to the show. As I said, we heard in the intro about his background. You started off, Mark, as a lawyer in legal aid working with children. Tell me a little bit about that, please.
Sure. The Juvenile Rights Division of Legal Aids, their role in the family court is to represent children who are arrested, children who are running away, acting out, et cetera, in their home. And also children who have, there's an allegation of abuse or neglect. And I spent 7 years in Brooklyn and in Queens working in that kind of representative work. And I think it was, I know it was that experience that caused me to look outward from the court system, because my conclusion really was that it was a very unhealthy way to deal with the kinds of issues that are brought into the family court. So and my first program actually was a mentoring program for youth. And in some ways, the core elements of that program are reflected in everything that became Community Mediation Services, which is over 30 years old now.
But talk to me a bit about what you found to be so unhealthy that inspired you to start Community Mediation Services.
Well, at its core, it's the process. The adversarial process requires blame. It's as a vehicle for making decisions. It's polarizing of members of the family, and that is all antithetical to you, to the way you want to address family problems. You want to address family problems by healing relationships, not by further exacerbating or even destroying relationships. So the other aspect of it for me was, it's one thing that adults are struggling with whatever they're struggling and they end up in the court system, but here the children are the ones who are most abused by the system, and with all good intentions. But an adversarial process is really antithetical to dealing with relationships within the family. So the program that I developed was modeled after an evidence-based program, a mentoring program that focused on empowering the teenagers. So it diverted kids who were arrested. It diverted kids who might have been truant from school, maybe even or running away. And created a mentorship with a college student, and it was very intensive, and it really is very central to all that we do, in that it is individual focused with a goal setting approach, relational focused with a mediation approach with the parent and the teen, and a community focused in helping the young person experience self advocacy so that they can achieve their goals by utilizing community resources. Mm-hmm. So for me, that was the almost an ideal framework to help youth to actualize themselves in positive ways.
So you've just described very wonderfully how a community mediation or mediation model differs from what happened in court with an adversarial model that required blame and so forth. And it's interesting, I think, that you talk about it being adversarial, the relationship being described as adversarial, because I'm thinking in the family as well, one of the reasons why listeners may be listening in today
is because they are experiencing adversarial relationships with their children in their own families. And I know historically the relationship between parents and children has been a pretty authoritarian one. You know, I'm the adult, you're the child, you will listen to me. And so my understanding is that your program and your approach proposes something quite different from that.
Yes. I mean, it really at its, it's even beyond that, because children were always considered property. You know, at one point, the property of the father, and years later, the property of the mother, with the assumption of custody in the mother. And the problem with all of that is the assumption that the children are less than individuals. And it's ironic, because you want them to be fully actualized individuals as an adult. So there's a need to begin literally at birth in acknowledging and recognizing their needs and concerns and fears, responding to that in a respectful way. And so it goes all through life. That doesn't mean that you're giving up your responsibilities as a parent. What it does mean is that you're creating a sentient being, someone who you hope will begin to understand their place in the world and be able to make choices out of some wisdom, not out of just emotions. And so they're really, I went to a 1 day New York State Mediation Day. Janet Reno, who was the Attorney General under Clinton, is an amazing person. What I didn't know when I'd heard her was that she actually had every U.S. Attorney staff member trained in conflict resolution skills, she stated that conflict resolution is important right from birth. And
interesting.
The basic premise, I think, holds, which is you have to listen respectfully,
mm-hmm.
And you have to respond in a thoughtful way to what you hear, what kind of needs are expressed. It's very simple when they're an infant. As they get into a little bit older,
right,
2, 3, and they start really asserting themselves, well, then it becomes a matter of, you know, blending in the recognition, the understanding, in verbally and supportively, while also creating boundaries along with explanations. So you teach them to think, essentially,
it's a really kind of delicate balance that you're talking about here, because I would think that a parent's primary role is to instruct. And you're talking about, you know, being respectful and listening and so forth. How might you demonstrate something like that?
Well, it's not that you don't present your sense of a better way. Have you thought about this, et cetera? And you juxtapose it with the limits that you see as necessary for safety, for social requirements, for a sense of giving them a sense of respect for others, and you engage. You don't only, you know, set rules and enforce rules. And that's not to say that there aren't times, based upon your own time restraints, your own energy level or whatever, that you might not say, listen, I'd like to talk this out with you, but you have to stop that.
Now is not the time.
And and so it becomes a recognition of your own limits,
sure,
and combined with an acknowledgement and recognition of theirs,
right,
and it becomes, and the relationship evolves. So it becomes not a, you know, it doesn't have to be authoritarian. It definitely is there's a differential in power, and that's necessary. But I think that over time, what you're really doing is you're creating an individual who can think through things, make good decisions, so that at a certain point, when they're not in your sight, when they're in school, when they're in the playground, when they're on the street, they will be making more thoughtful decisions based upon understanding the dynamics of self, others, and what's more right, in a sense,
okay,
under certain circumstances.
Well, in your work through the center, the Community Mediation Center,
mm-hmm,
you are now challenged with imparting what you've just told us to folks who are experiencing conflict that I guess it's deep enough that
mm-hmm
they've been sent to you. How do people come to the Community Mediation Center?
Actually, from a number of ways. We get referrals from the family court.
Uh-huh.
One of our larger programs actually gets referrals as part of a system to divert mostly teenagers brought to court by their parents for not going to school, truanting at one degree or another, for being habitually disobedient, beyond their control, could be runaway, et cetera. There could be substance abuse involved. Occasionally there's other stuff in the behind that, sometimes delinquent behavior, you know, antisocial behavior, sometimes gang behavior. And we have caseworkers who blend in conflict resolution into the model by trying to mediate between the parent and teen to get them discussing things in a more thoughtful way rather than a reactive way, and creating agreements that would hopefully be utilized, be adjusted, et cetera, as part of the intervention. And you know, it could be something as simple as agreements on school, schoolwork, the parent becoming more involved, the youth, you know, discussing what their needs or concerns are, whether there are other resources that are needed, maybe there's an interest and we can connect them with a resource. Or curfew, you know, mm-hmm, simple things. And to try to elicit from the young person also, you know, what does it mean to you to be out at 9 o'clock at night? Why is that important to you? And for the parent, you know, why is that important to you that he be in? And it's actually from the parent's perspective in the community that we're located, it can be real dangerous.
Sure, for them to be out.
For them to be out,
yeah,
absolutely.
So
there's a lot of crime, and there's been way too many young people who've been killed.
Hmm.
But we deal with the whole county of Queens, 2.4 million people, many, many, many cultures.
Yes.
And that has its own unique qualities.
I think Queens is officially recognized through the Census Bureau as being the most diverse place in the country, isn't it?
I think that's what the people in Queens believe.
Sure, and I think that's a good reason.
Yeah, they're talking about something like close to 160 languages spoken.
Wow.
Yeah, it's an amazing
wow
place.
Wow.
And so when you have youth and their parents coming to the office, often you have first-generation Americans and second-generation or second and third generation with the grandparents in the house, and it can be the whole issue of what's important becomes very charged from a cultural, religious, and other perspective, so as to really require a lot of promoting a lot of understanding, mutual understanding about the whys, you know, of people need what they need.
Right.
And the young person, and their acculturation to America,
mm-hmm,
really flies in the face of a lot of the traditional behaviors that the parent or grandparents demand.
Right. What they're used to, what they expect,
right,
from their children and so forth.
Right.
You know, I'm really interested in moving then into some more of the specifics of how the mediation process works, you know, why people are able to come to agreement where they have been so entrenched in, mm-hmm. in positions and so forth in the past. We're going to go to a break, but when we come back, I'd like us to talk more about how mediation works. I mean, what you've described so far, what I'm getting from it is that you talk about very specific issues, but then you also talk about the meaning of those specific issues, which is something that perhaps doesn't happen when people don't have the advantage of a mediator being present to help them have the conversation. So when we come back, we're going to delve a little bit more deeply into that.
Great.
Right. So, folks, we are going to take a break. As I said, you're going to be hearing from Loida, and the song is Love is Stronger Than Pride. And that's something that we hope to inject in the mediation process, the idea of love being stronger than pride. We'll be back in just a moment. This is my ode to my favorite living diva.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the show. You are listening to Untangled Resolutions' presentation of The Problem is the Answer, a show about the personal, social, and financial issues that concern you most. I'm your host, Batabi Lebuntombeni, relationship coach and divorce mediator, and I'm broadcasting live from Harlem, USA. Untangled Resolutions is a private practice in couples and divorce mediation. If you have an issue that just won't go away, work it out in couples mediation. If ending a relationship is your healthiest choice, I will guide the process so you don't lose your shirt or your mind. Work out your child support and parenting issues without spending years in court. For more information, visit my website, www.123untangled.com. That's www.123untangled.com. You've been listening to Loida George sing Love is Stronger Than Pride, and that is from her album, Loida, live at Bohemian Caverns. You can catch Loida live at the Bohemian Caverns on July 28th at 8 p.m. If you are in the Washington, D.C. area, I really encourage you to go and check her out. She is a wonderful, wonderful singer and a wonderful performer. To hear her live is a special treat. So that is July 28th at 8 p.m., Bohemian Caverns in Washington, D.C. I do need to let you know that there is no chat room today. We're having some technical issues with that, but you can participate in the show by calling in. The number to call is 818-532-9789. That's 818-532-9789. And you should get some instructions when you call in that tell you that if you want to be heard on the show, you should press the number 1. But it's really important that if you do call in and you don't want to be heard on the show, because you can actually call in and listen from your phone. So if you don't want to be heard on the show, don't press 1. Otherwise, I will put you on the air. So again, the number is 818-532-9789. I'd also like you to check out the blog that is the companion to this show. It is at untangledresolutions.blogspot.com. And this is where you can find links to resources mentioned on the show and find out more about the music and the musicians I feature. It is also your opportunity to continue the conversation started here on the show. So please jump right in and let your voice be heard. UntangledResolutions.blogspot.com. I'm talking today with Mark Kleiman, who is the founder and executive director of Community Mediation Services Incorporated in Queens, New York. We are talking about how to stop fighting with your children, very simply put. Welcome back to the show, Mark. And we've been talking about the mediation process. And I'd like to hear a little bit more about what happens in mediation when you bring families in and they have an opportunity to work things out. Are there any common issues that you see or any stories that you can tell that can illustrate how things work?
Well, there's one thing I think that sort of blends in with both the music that people heard, as well as this, the come on for the show, which is to prevent fighting with your children, and also mediation. One of the core qualities that we train our mediators to embrace is one of humility, and it really comes down to the kind of total respect you have to have for the individuals who walk in the room. You've never walked in their shoes. You don't know about their lives. Mm-hmm. All you know is what they're going to say and what your responsibility really is to have them share as much information as possible so they have something to work with in order to try to resolve what they came there for. Mm-hmm. And the issue when you're dealing with a parent and a child, really a parent and a teen, which is where probably the majority of the cases that we handle, has to do with pride. You know, I'm the parent,
right?
And you're going to do what I say. And when I set the rules, you're going to abide by them. And there have been any number of times when I would mediate, and I'm mediating between parents and child, and I try to, let's say, the issue is staying out late.
Yeah.
And as a good mediator, I might say, no, it sounds like you might be concerned about the safety of your child on the street. And I've had any number of times parents say, no, that's not what I'm saying. I want him to obey the rules. That's what I want. And, you know, as you see pride, you know,
right.
come into the room.
So there, for them, it's not really even about being able to acknowledge their feelings of concern about their child being out there, which I'm sure there's something
I'm
of
sure
it.
I'm sure there's there.
But it's really, really important that the hierarchy in the family be maintained.
Right. And that can have, you know, historical, cultural, familial, you know, source. And the whole issue of pride manifests not only in the mediation room, obviously, but at home on a day-to-day basis. And interestingly, I had there was a woman who went through the training about a year ago, and someone I've known in the community for a long, long time. She's very active in the community as far as youth are concerned. And she was sharing with me that, boy, she'd love to be able to, you know, like she had a very strained relationship with a daughter. They have a hard time when they're together. They always end up fighting. And after, I think it was the third day of the mediation, she came in and she was like really excited. And she said, Mark, you won't believe it. I did what you guys said. I said, I was in the car with my daughter, and she's giving me the same stuff that I hear all the time. And instead of responding to it, I just listened. Mm-hmm. And she said, it was like a miracle. All of a sudden, tension disappeared. You know, my daughter wasn't, you know, maybe she expected me to say something.
Sure.
Didn't happen. And by letting her talk, all of a sudden, I was, you know, it just changed dramatically our relationship. So
just that simple thing of listening.
Just listening. There actually is a project that many people know, particularly if you listen to public radio, called StoryCorps.
Okay.
And StoryCorps is a place that it's been around maybe for 10, 12 years. There are places that people can come with special people in their lives, sit down and interview them. You know, a grandparent, a neighbor, a friend, whatever, you know, and it's very poignant and very wonderful. And the man who created it wrote a book where there are excerpts, many of these really some of the more wonderful stories. And the book is called To Listen Is to Love.
Yes. Oh, wow.
And this is really, it's a powerful thing,
right.
You know,
right.
Giving people that opportunity right. to say, particularly to say, tell you things that are of great concern to them.
Yes.
And mediation provides that opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the responsibilities, really, the mediator is to make sure everybody has the opportunity to be listened to share what they need to share, to
mm-hmm.
put on the table everything that's important to
mm-hmm.
them, and an opportunity to let each other know what is most important, so that not only do you have, you know, a demand, but you also have, you know, some texture to it. What aspect of it, you know, is more important and why?
Mm-hmm.
So that when they're in a position of deciding what to do about it, they can appreciate the relative values
mm-hmm.
that are embedded
right.
in whatever the issues are that they're, you know, contending about.
So you've just given us a real nugget of gold right there in sharing the story, and that really it was just about listening, because one of the things I'm hoping that comes out of the show is that a person listening to the show
mm-hmm.
can go back and implement what they hear in their own lives. So one thing that you've said definitely, which can have magical results, is just to listen. And then you started talking about what are you listening for. Now, it's really interesting that you're saying this, because the start of this radio show, to begin with, people who have been listening from the very beginning when we started back in February will remember that the first show that I did was called Listen to Be Heard. So it is about the mediation process in that sense, and I was talking about what I call collaborative self-advocacy, helping people to understand how they can have conversations with people that are not antagonistic, but are actually productive. So it seems like we're going down a sort of similar path as this is concerned. You just said first listen. But mm-hmm. then you also talked about being able then to have information that allows people to make meaningful decisions when
right.
it now comes time to solving problems. So let's talk a little bit about what a parent can do next. So you talked about this person, this woman who is part of the CMS community,
mm-hmm.
who tried this technique of just listening in the car
mm-hmm.
and it worked. What would you encourage a parent to do next?
Well, I think the next thing is to make sure that once you do that, the emotional edge, that tension is reduced. And once the tension is reduced, there's a greater likelihood of communication happening
mm-hmm.
That is honest and more respectful, and they'll be more comfortable sharing.
Now, what if you don't like what you hear?
Well, you see, you're not going to like everything you hear, period, in life. The question is, why would you respond?
Uh-huh.
If you want to really understand the other person, because that's the other quality of, you know, how do you promote understanding? And if it's just you and your child, you really should want to understand
mm-hmm.
what it is that they're struggling with. And by the same token, showing that, you can, gives you an opportunity also of sharing maybe what is of concern to you.
Okay.
You know, when I hear this, when you do that, it makes me concerned about
mm-hmm.
or fearful about, or, you know, I need to, you know, feel that, you know, you're going to make a good decision,
mm-hmm.
whatever it is, whatever is going on. And now in a mediation, usually it's a contention about a particular issue. It could be a curfew. It could be a doing your work, being in school, going to school.
Who you hang out with.
Who you hang out with. And, you know, and how you communicate.
Yes.
And so it comes down to really a discussion about specifics. And the other part of being a mediator, and it's a reflection also of knowing you're not going to live with these people.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, they need to work it out.
Yes.
And
you're not going to be in the house
stay.
With them all the time.
You're never going to be
being
in the
house. Well, although, yes, exactly.
You're basically
be in the house
there
with
them. For an hour, maybe, and 2 hours.
Sure.
And you want them to be, the more they communicate,
uh-huh.
the more they struggle with these issues, the more they try to bring order to the chaos.
Yeah.
And then an order to the overlay of the emotions that are so much a driving force of the chaos,
mm-hmm.
they will walk out with a better relationship and hopefully sort out a couple of items that they can begin a process of regaining trust.
Mm-hmm.
Because with a parent and teen parent-child mediation, you're not talking about a one-shot deal. You're talking about several sessions over time
okay.
where they might structure an agreement around one issue that is the most of greatest concern.
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes it's the least concern because that's all you can get.
Okay.
But next week they may come back, okay, what happened? And how, you know, often it does have an impact in the way they then can communicate over that next period of time. So you're interested not only about, you know, did you do A or B, but you know, how are things in the house? What, if anything change?
Mm-hmm.
And you're looking for essentially some incremental change. You hope for incremental change, but your purpose is really to give them the opportunity to listen to each other.
So folks should understand that we're talking about a process, not an event.
Right. You're talking about a process. Now, for certain kinds of mediation where you're really dealing with a narrow issue, let's say it's a somebody's dog went out to and destroyed somebody's garden, then it may be a finite amount of the relationship is maybe neighbor, but either they do or they don't have a relationship, hopefully as a result of the communication, they will have a better relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But the subject matter may involve, you know, what you do with your dog,
mm-hmm.
and how you compensate me for the garden that I spend many, many hours mm-hmm. creating
mm-hmm.
in the spring.
Right.
So it can be very transactional,
mm-hmm.
but when you're dealing with parents, when you're dealing with family things, particularly where the relationship is really the core,
mm-hmm.
it's a process
mm-hmm.
over time,
right.
And what you're trying to do is introduce them into a way of communicating
mm-hmm.
that's healthier, a way of problem solving that hopefully can be instructive as to how they can deal with specific issues in the future, and some mutual understanding.
Right. So what I'm really excited about hearing is that a person can come in, or a family can come in for mediation,
mm-hmm.
deal with the particular issue that is at hand, but then be able to go back home with a sort of permanent gift,
this mm-hmm.
ability
exactly.
to communicate with each other, which needs to develop over time. It is something that we acknowledge doesn't necessarily
mm-hmm.
happen overnight. We can hope sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have these epiphanies that happen.
Mm-hmm.
But
aha moment.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You've got your, as Oprah would say, right?
but
you are allowing for a permanent kind of change, so that, as you said, the mediator doesn't always have to be there. Families can do these things on their own.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think one of the underlying beliefs in the field, even certainly in myself, is that, you know, conflict is the most normal thing
mm-hmm.
in the world. It is I believe that it is central to existence in this universe. And its purpose is to enable you to create a more rich, stable self, environment, etc. And therefore, the mediation's purpose is to present a process that enables people to do so in their own lives.
Well, I think this is really important. I'd like to stop here for a moment and delve a little bit more deeply into what you've just said, because I get the sense sometimes that folks have a conception of mediation and mediators as being actually kind of avoiding conflict, in the sense that the purpose of a mediator is to stop the conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like you're saying something a little bit different, because you're talking about a process of actually addressing conflict rather than just
right.
stopping it.
Actually, I mean, I think a lot of people see conflict as an opportunity
okay.
for something, for change, for something better. And I think that's the purpose. I mean, mediation tries to have people embrace the conflict, really, by sharing it, acknowledging it, and trying to figure out what to do about it.
Mm-hmm.
And the process is the what to do about it. It's also the sharing it. And trying to, you know, identify what the issues really are that they have to grapple with. So in many ways, this is at the heart, it's a process at the heart of furthering the, you know, stabilization, but also the process itself is a reflection of essentially attaining wisdom, which
mm-hmm.
is the process of making better decisions.
Okay.
I mean, research around the issue of wisdom, there's three components. One is having knowledge, the information.
Yes.
The other is analysis, thinking through, and decision making. And the third is the emotional component.
Mm-hmm.
Understanding what's driving the emotion, and putting it in context,
mm-hmm.
because our emotions are vital to us in identifying what we need to do, but dangerous to us, because if we can't process it in a thoughtful way based upon the past, based upon understanding what it means, then we can overreact.
Mm.
And the closer the relationship, the more difficult it is to negotiate that.
Sure. Well, the stakes are higher.
The stakes are higher. And your personal sense of self, particularly as a parent or as a child growing, you know, your sense of self with your peers, if you're a teenager, that becomes paramount.
Mm-hmm.
Your peers really become, they supplant your family, but they become a community. And one of the primary needs in teenage years is to feel a sense of community.
Mm-hmm.
And often the struggle within the family makes it more difficult to see that as your community. And
so instead, you're going to go outside of your family
and you're
going to
search for community. And in the more dysfunctional of contexts,
mm-hmm.
that community can be a gang.
Okay.
And that's the draw. There's a sense of protecting each other,
mm-hmm.
of common purpose, and taking care of each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the draw for that kind of a grouping. I mean, it could also be, you know, a team, you know, a sports team.
Sure.
It could be, you can find it in many places.
Yeah.
The as a parent, you need to be vigilant that you give your child opportunities that are wholesome. And you also have to recognize and understand the forces that are in their lives that motivate them,
mm-hmm.
and have from the beginning developed this communication on an adult-like way. And I tell people very often when they talk to me about children, I said, almost from the beginning, you have to speak to the adult in that child.
Speak to the adult in the child.
And you cultivate that, because there is an internal integrity at every stage of life,
uh-huh.
that is a function of needs and a function of an ongoing process of trying to understand the world.
Okay.
And as a parent, you're kind of the broker between the world and that child, and the degree they can understand it, as well as be protected from it,
mm-hmm.
and protected from maybe their impulses. You can cultivate that adult, and that's what the adult is. It's the personhood that's then able to make wiser decisions for themselves. And if the parent is making all the decisions, it's very hard to, you know, to see that child making good decisions.
Right. Because, yeah. Well, they've not been in a place where they've been able to practice it themselves. You know, it's interesting, you've come back around sort of full circle talking again about wisdom, because you
right.
talked about the process of attaining wisdom, and then you're also talking about the need to be able to exercise wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
And in a situation that is really authoritarian, it sounds like it is the parent who is exercising all of the wisdom.
Well,
I'm not sure that it's not...
It's not a wise action.
Well, no, exactly. So I'm not.
Wisdom is. There's a really good book about wisdom,
uh-huh.
and the research that's gone into it, and the analysis from the past and writings and stuff, and the conclusion was that we don't really know what wisdom is.
Right. But and I was.
What we know is what kind of processes lead themselves towards wiser decisions.
Right.
And it's all process,
mm-hmm.
and the mediation process provides some kind of a template for that.
Mm-hmm.
But a parent on a day-to-day basis really needs to cultivate that drawing out of information, that learning how to think, and understanding, you know, more reflectively on the part of the child, how emotions play.
Right.
And, yeah.
So, I mean, this is what I should have said is sort of wisdom in parentheses.
Yes.
Or in quotation marks.
Yes.
Because there's an assumption by the parent that what they're doing is wise.
Mm-hmm.
And what's great, what we're bringing forward here is that there perhaps is not so much wisdom in thinking that the parent has all the wisdom.
Or the answers, right. Sure.
But that also it's important that if you are looking for your child to grow into a mature, actualized person, it is important for you to engage in that reasoning process with the child so that you're not always giving directions, but that you are actually saying, well, you know, let's talk this through.
Mm-hmm.
And this brings me back again to the topic of the show, negotiating with your children or how not to be fighting with your children.
Right.
And so we've talked about the magic of just listening. We've talked about what happens if perhaps you don't like what you're hearing, but you can still engage and talk through things. We've talked about the importance of talking about why things matter, why things are important to you. You said, for example, that you could say to your child, I'm afraid when something or another happens. And I think that in many contexts, the idea of a parent acknowledging that they themselves are afraid of something is not encouraged, shall
mm-hmm.
I say? But in this context, you're saying let the kid know the impact that their decisions and their behaviors have on the parent.
In some ways, it's a bit of an act of humility.
Uh-huh.
It's putting your pride of knowing the answer, so or the need to know the answer as a parent, the need to set the rules, enforce the rules, and an acknowledgement that the child is outside of your purview. So much of their life, and they need to be able to make decisions on their own. So the degree you cultivate that aspect of them, and yeah, when they're 2 years old, not that they're going to understand it all, but through tone, action, and speech, even if all the words they don't understand, they will pick up the words. Kids will you'll always underestimate your children, always.
Wow.
And over time, I mean, because kids naturally are supportive of other kids. I mean, you see a 3-year-old go to a 2-year-old and put their head on their lap, give them a hug or whatever.
Yes.
I mean, kids have a natural inclination for that. And then if they're in an emotional state, they may strike out
mm-hmm.
also. But it's helping them to put names to, differentiate it. And it comes down really to the development of their brain,
mm-hmm.
the emotions in the back connected with the thought process in the front.
Mm-hmm.
And the more you can help them make that connection, the stronger that connection will be, and the more they're able to generalize it when they're confronted with it,
mm-hmm.
the thinking part of their brain, the frontal cortex, will be able to mitigate their reaction.
Okay.
And that's essentially every time you do that, you are making you're making that connection stronger. You're making it more sophisticated in terms of the kinds of situations, and making them think through
mm-hmm.
what they're going to do before they do it.
So think before you speak becomes a natural action for them.
Right.
Right. It's difficult for me to have to say this, but we're actually out of time.
That's too bad.
It is too bad. I would love to have you come back. I'm eager to hear what the responses are from folks who are listening and if there are extra questions that they have. But this has been really wonderful, Mark. Thank you so much for being a guest here on the show.
It's been a pleasure.
All right.
It's been a pleasure.
Well, folks, I hope that you've enjoyed the show. And if you do have questions, please feel free to get in touch. UntangledResolutions.blogspot.com is one way to do that. You can also friend me on Facebook, and you can friend the show on Facebook as well. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you can join us again next week at this time. I'm going to leave you with a song by master guitarist and vocalist Brandon Ross. It is called Peace Flows, and it is from his album Costume, and I'm wishing you a very peaceful week for you and your family. Have a wonderful week, everyone, and goodbye for now.